This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over 5 of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
Matt, did you hear about the... Well, I was reading about the poet that went bankrupt recently.
Right.
He owed everyone. All right, that wasn't that good. It was
Yeah, I think that was above my intelligence level a little bit there, Joe. I think you need to dial it back.
Okay.
Slightly.
All right. Earlier today, I was watching. I was watching a fly fishing tournament. It was a live stream.
Ah, there we go.
Is that better?
I like that one. I could give that one a bit of a chuckle.
Thanks. Thanks. Hello, right. Dear listener. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, indeed. Now, it's, dear listener, Nam has been and gone. Neither of us were there this year, Matt.
Terrible. I actually feel last year, I mean, you know, not to bring COVID into it, but, you know, sort of, you forget that the 3 years have been like a bit of a, lots has happened, you know, lots of sad things have happened, but it's been such a blur. And then you just sort of forget that, yeah, last time I went was January 2020.
Well,
you know, even last year, there was so much going on. And then you sort of go, I didn't really think about it. And then this year, I was like, oh, I'm kind of sad I wasn't there. Lots of people looked like they were there and saw lots of video. I mean, I'm not really on social media anymore, but every time I did turn it on, someone was like posting a video. And I was like,
yeah, there was definitely
I felt jealous.
I think you got FOMO, did you?
I did. I think I got a bit FOMO on that one. Yeah.
It definitely looked like lots of people were filming stuff, but then they, you know, they always are and am. But I heard mixed things. I heard things from both sides of it. Some people said, you know, it was fantastic, but Most of the people that were telling me that were the people that had spent thousands of pounds to be there, and I imagine they were trying to justify it to themselves. Other people had less of a good time. I still think it's extortionately expensive, and I didn't want to go this year out of the principle that they put it on during the Easter holidays when yeah. the hotels were even more expensive than they were normally. Just NAM doesn't seem to care about making it an event that people can afford to be at. It's such a weird business model.
I don't know if it was the summer holidays in the US. I'm guessing it might have been, which I'm sure I remember speaking to someone who said there was something in the US, but where, for listeners who don't know, but it's in Anaheim in Orange County. I think Anaheim's in Orange County. But that's basically Anaheim was built for Disneyland. Yeah. So, you know, it is crazy busy at that time of year, especially in holidays. Actually, in January, it is the NAM crowd and the convention crowd. But yeah, once you start going into holidays, and of course, yeah. there's loads of hotels around there and loads of relatively crap restaurants. and they're always super busy because of, you know, the 100,000 people that basically descend onto to NAM. Yeah. And then obviously, if you add in all of the school people as well. I mean, I saw a few pictures and it maybe didn't look as packed as I've seen it before, but I saw quite a lot of the booths, and some brands yeah. had like bigger booths and sort of stuff like that. So, you know, seems like quite a few people had a good time. Yeah. Or hopefully they didn't have a good time, and then that makes me feel slightly better about not being there. And yeah. maybe a better time of year to be there. I think, you know, early spring, definitely a bit warmer. I mean, LA's not freezing, or it hasn't been freezing when I've been in January, but certainly it gets colder at night.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think sure. going in April, I think it's probably a little bit warmer.
Probably a little nicer. Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I imagine we'll be there next January anyway. But let's,
yeah, because I'm guessing there's no summer NAM. I don't think there's summer NAM.
I don't
NAM
think
this
it's coming
again.
Back. No, which is a shame. I never got to go. And it was a good excuse to go to Nashville. And I really wish I'd been. Everything, like you, every time you talk about it, it just sounds so much better, so much more fun, so much more rock and roll than
well,
the,
I think, you know, LA, I think, is a very Marmite city for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, I don't like it at all.
But Nashville has certainly got, like, a really good music. I mean, LA obviously has a good music scene. It's, like, sure. the center of the entertainment universe. But Nashville, you know, the Strip, a lot of different music, a lot of different bars, a lot going on. You know, it's really... Yeah. It's like,
I like that it's all in one area.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, Summer NAM itself is actually really small, but the convention—the one thing I always remember is that it takes about 10 minutes just to actually walk to like the floor where everything happens, right. because the convention center is so massive, and you just forget how much bigger they can make things in America compared to England. But yeah, it's definitely not coming back this year. Whether it will come back next year,
we'll see.
We'll see. But yeah, definitely a little bit of FOMO.
Well, that's okay, because there's plenty of new releases that happened that we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Indeed.
The news section. But before we do, I wanted to talk about a couple of other things. I've been getting really into EQ pedals, Matt. I know that sounds like a weird, relatively dull thing, but...
Hello there, I like some EQ.
I like EQ pedals, but I kind of feel like maybe I missed a trick here. Maybe, you know, you, dear listener, you and Matt, maybe you were going, well, of course, they're fantastic. But they'd always just pass me by. I was always like, well, the EQ is, you know, I normally have an overdrive on anyway, and that's providing... EQ, there's EQ off of my amp. It just wasn't anything that I especially needed to have an additional pedal for. They're quite unglamorous in that sense. You know, all you're really controlling is the boosting or cutting of, you know, the volume of bat and band frequencies of EQ. It's not as exciting as like a fuzz pedal with three different vintage effects voicings, or a synth pedal with an arpeggiator on it. It's a relatively unglamorous thing, but they're obviously so fantastic. They work in. There are so many different situations where an EQ pedal can be fantastic. Whether it's like in the effects loop of your amp, tweaking your amp, or, you know, being used to turn a one channel valve amp into a two channel Valvant by, like, you know, knocking off a little bit of the level, so creating a clean channel, maybe scooping out some mids, knocking off a little bit of level on an EQ. Like, subtractive use of an EQ pedal can be so interesting, so fantastic. Mm. You can create so many things with it. And basically, yeah, I just feel like I've missed a trick. They can replace overdrive pedals. There's so many creative ways, you know, coctoirs, radio filters, those sorts of things. There's so much cool stuff that you can do with EQ pedals. So I was like, maybe I need to get into this. I need to start looking for EQ pedals. I mean, what about you, Matt? Do you, you know, is an EQ pedal an essential part of any pedal board you use?
It never has been.
Right. Oh, good. So I'm not on my own here. I felt like when I started messing around with them, I was like, why didn't I know about this?
No, I do own an EQ pedal. I guess, you know, the GE7, the Boss GE7s, I guess, are kind of like industry standard because it's been around for the longest.
Right.
In the traditional sense. And it gave people a physical graphic EQ.
Which makes it so much easier than a parametric, you know, so you can really visualize where you're boosting and cutting.
Yeah, so I do have a GE7, and a GE7 is often cited as, like, the secret weapon of, like, so many studio guitarists, and quite a few, like, Rick Rundowns I've watched, and people have been like, oh, you know, GE7, that's the thing. I think the Nashville session guitarist Tom Bukovac, I think he's like, oh yeah, it's like the secret part of my whole sound. I've always got to have a GE7. I mean, Tom Morello always had a GE7, but had all the EQ flat and just used the boost, because if you remember,
that's cool.
A GE7 has got the 7-band EQ, but then it's also got
you got 15 decibels of boost or cut.
Exactly. So, you know, it does exactly what it says on the tin, and it's been around for, I think, probably 30 years. Right. And I would actually say in the boutique pedal boom, that's when a lot more EQ has started to come out. So, I mean, just talking through a couple of the options that I've always looked at and I thought were quite cool. Not strictly an EQ, but the Hampstead Zenith, if you remember that, they call it an amplitude controller. So it's an EQ boost and a compressor all in one. Mm-hmm. So you've got sort of a 2-3 position switches with 3 different peaks, if you will, and then 3 different EQ ranges, and then you've got a bass, middle, and treble on there, and then you've got comp, blend, and level for your compressor. So you've got sort of EQ and boost on there, and it's got the nice flexi switch. So I think with the button, if you press the button once, it turns on both. If you hold it down, I think you can then have EQ on all the time and turn the compression on and off, if I remember.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So I thought that's a really cool little pedal.
It's kind of similar in many ways to the Jackson Audio do their Bloom, which is a compressor and an EQ all cut into one pedal.
I think, like you say, EQ on its own, perhaps a bit dry. Like, a great studio tool.
But it depends what you're running into it. You're running into the front end of a valve amp, and depending on how you're using that, you're getting that sort of organic push that you get out of a valve preamp as well.
Well, and I mean, if you go back all the way to the first Boss Compact, you know, SP1 Spectrum is a single band EQ. And, you know, a lot of people used and utilized that. And you see a lot of things out there like the Greer Moonshot, which is a germanium pre, so you've got like a treble middle control on there with a boost. The Mark Lethierry J Rocket Audio is a graphic EQ with a boost. So there's a few things out there. I mean, one thing, you know, to sling the corporate side a little bit more, but actually one thing that I always thought was really cool, and you mentioned a couple of things, you know, different scenarios you might want to use it for, but the EQ200.
What a pedal.
Because you've got 10 bands.
10 bands, yeah.
10 bands. You can run it mono, you can run it stereo, or you can run it dual mono, which I really like. So you can run it mono and you can switch between an A and a B setting. You can run it stereo and you can have a different EQ coming out of each side. you know, so that in itself, I like the fact you can go between A and B, plus you've got presets, plus you can run it. Or one my favorite thing is using it as an effects loop, so you can then have an insert a drive pedal, and then you can have drive before and after.
Which is great. It's that, but the EQ 200 is fantastic. Having, I think, getting the most, making the most out of an EQ pedal, because there are going to be different ways you're going to want to use it. Having the MIDI capabilities of the EQ 200, so that you can flick through presets, is it makes it incredibly useful. Do you remember like the Fuzzrocious Feed Me, Matt? We did a video on it years ago.
Yeah, we had one of those, and that's really cool, because that was, if I remember, you had a 10. Sorry, I've tried to write Feed Me, and then I put Feed Man. I haven't heard much from Fuzz Roses recently. We should reach out to Ryan
I bought a pedal off of him a few months ago. I bought a Fuzz Roses Little Fella Overdrive.
We talked about that, didn't we?
It was really good. I actually, I used it for a bit, and it was fantastic. I just, you know, like changing things all the time. So it came off my pedal board, and Naomi wanted one for her project with Biffy Clyro's Simon Neil and Venart and the drummer from Slayer that she's in, Empire State.
That
Bastards.
Is mental.
It's mad that she's now the well bass
done
player in that band. Yeah,
Naomi for that one.
So good. Her and JD are actually coming on the podcast next week or the week after, I think. We're going to do a bit of a bassy sort of thing, but we just want to talk a bunch about Empire State Bastard, because that's amazing. But I sent her the little fella. That's actually, I think, the distortion that she's been using.
Oh, cool. But yeah, Feed Me, I mean, they've updated it now. I think I had the V1, but the one now has two 12-position pots, which are a mixture of high and low pass filters, so you can have 144 different tone stack combinations.
I really like that they're all notched, so that they're just each one essentially sounds good, just in a different way.
Yeah, and there's just so many different. But I think it's one of those cool ones that, rather than a graphic EQ and saying I want more bass or less treble or whatever, this is sort of, this one feels more like an effect. And that's the thing, you see a lot of EQ pedals out there that are designed to kind of, in some ways, rather than widen the EQ scope, like narrow it and give you a much more focused sort of sound. And actually, if we think about it, the Angry Rhubarb. Is it the Angry Rhubarb?
The Angry Rhubarb's the white and red JHS Boss Overdrive, which was the... Angry Rhubarb's Red Beards, the parametrically controlled overdrive that Tim from my band Polymath uses. He loves it because you get like gorgeous, you can get like really rich sounding Coctoir tones, but because you can add overdrive in different places, you can add it pre and post the
EQ. Because it's three, paradynamic overdrive. So they've got two independent overdrive circuits either side of an extremely interactive EQ.
Yeah.
So that's another great example of using EQ for a drive.
Yeah, yeah.
That gives you a lot of different effects and, you know, stuff like that as well, which is quite cool.
Definitely. That kind of leads on to the, when I started getting really into EQ pedals and looking around at things, I discovered the Mesa Boogie Throttle Box EQ.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
Remember the large pedal? So it's an EQ and distortion. Sorry, go on.
No, I think, did I do a video on?
Maybe that? With like Pete Honore back when he was working for Mesa Boogie. One of the first videos that ever went out on GAC, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I think you had Josh Allen playing or something, didn't you?
No, there's me. Oh my God. I'm going to have to save this video and watch it later. but there's me. And me and Pete Honore from 10 years ago. And I'm doing what looks like some absolutely terrible guitar playing. It just makes me realize how long I've actually known Pete, Mr. Pete.
Back when he was trying to flog us Mr. Boogie amps.
Yeah, I'm going to have to send him that. but yeah, I remember that, the throttle box, because actually I've been looking even further back than that recently on the Boogie stuff, because they also did some valve pedals. Do you remember the Mess Boogie valve pedals they did?
I don't at all.
If you want to go extreme, Joe, the Mesa Boogie V-twin tube preamp, which is effectively a single channel from a Boogie rectifier. So you've got active EQ.
Oh, I do remember these. They were in corrugated iron.
Yeah. But you can run into mixer or headphones. You can run into a power amp. You can run into the front of a guitar amp.
Right.
But you've got an EQ on there. And obviously you've got gain and volume as well, which is quite...
Wow, this is great. They're like 250. It's between 220 and £300 on the pre-owned market.
Yeah. So there's another option for you. But the throttle box was... they were really cool pedals, those.
Yeah.
They felt like really good boutique pedals before there was a lot of other boutique pedals in some ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a pedal with sliders on it and rotary controls. You've got a master tone, a gain, a high and a low level, then a 5-band more specific EQ, and then a bunch of little switches to change what your mids are doing. And then you can kick in a distortion as well on top of the EQ. So you can use it as both an EQ and a distortion. In fact, I remembered after I saw this, I was like, why do I know this pedal? And I kind of was like, I feel like I know that it's also great for bass. And I was trying to remember, and I got it. It was from Juan Odorete's second rig rundown with Premier Guitar when he was playing bass for Marilyn Manson, and he's going through his setup and essentially he has one of these always on running into the front of an Ampeg SVT-8 Pro. That's his sound. It's like a P bass going into, well, it was a Warwick bass with a precision pickup going through one of these into the front of an amp. And he said he had
quite a different pedal board for that setup than obviously did for Mars Volta.
Oh, completely different. I actually, if you watch the rig rundown, considering how knowledgeable Juan is, I feel like that was the rig that is provided for Marilyn Manson's bass player, and it just happened to be Juan at that time. You know, like he had to get in the tech to sort of talk through some things. So I feel like the techs know how to get that sound, and then it's just the person playing the gear that changes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because he's the whole way through, he sort of has to be like, can you explain this to the fellow? And it's like, you're probably the most knowledgeable guy on pedals, and he couldn't really explain his
I guess with some of those things, there's probably, like you say, a very specific sound that needs to be achieved. I like the fact, Music Radar's review from Mick Taylor, of all people, back in last updated December 10th, 2019, he said, pros, hooligan level of metal/hard rock gain, but good classic sounds too. Cons, nothing. So thanks, Mick. I'll mention that to Mick as well. Just pulled up a review that you wrote 10 years ago.
Yeah, wow.
I'm guessing he was, he would have still been editor of Guitarist magazine at that point.
Yeah, I imagine so. But we'll see. I was sort of digging around to see what I had in my pedal collection of EQs, things that I currently have. And I found, we've spoken about it before, a G7B, which is the bass EQ in the brown and gold chassis.
Oh, the worst colours ever.
What? Oh, is it the colours you don't like? You've always said you didn't like those. And I was like, I don't understand. This is great. They look cool. It's the brown and gold looks fine. They did a whole range, didn't they? A whole series of pedals in that colour.
Yeah. GEB7, CEB7. Yeah.
Was it all bass pedals, was it? In that
Series? Yeah.
Right.
CEB7, GEB7.
Brown and gold.
And I guess because OC2 was still around then, and that was brown.
Yeah.
But then LMB3 was blue. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know why. I guess they went brown, low, brown note, bass. I don't know. I just
like that you're trying to work it out, though.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they just ran out of colours at that point and went, oh, brown. But yeah. I think is it exactly the same circuit as the later one? I don't actually know the difference, to be honest.
I've no idea why it changed, because there is obviously another that was the GEB7, right? Whereas they then made the GE7B, and that was in the normal colours of the.
And I think that the difference between the GE7 GE7B is obviously the frequencies on the sliders are different to account for.
Isn't that right? Because it's still seven. It's still seven band, though.
Yeah, it's still seven. Oh, actually, GEB7. I'm just going to have a look. Oh, wait. No, hold on. GEB7.
Right. Yeah.
And you've got, is yours the
I've got the brown
E7B.
One. I don't know, yeah. What, something like that, yeah. Whatever, it's the brown and gold one. They can't have named that, yeah. So mine's the GE7B.
Right, okay, yeah. That's where I always get confused. So the GE7B, 1987 to 1992.
There you go.
Still seven band. Let's just have a quick look. It's different EQ ranges.
Right, I see.
On the modern ones, 50 to 10. The old ones are 62 to 4K.
Well, I thought it was very good. You know, I mean, I can't really remember, but I assume it was very good. It stayed on my board for years. One of my first pedals, I think.
You were just as boring back then as you are now, Joe. Hello there. Exactly. I'd like an EQ pedal for my bass. Although, what bass pedals were people using? Could you buy at that
point? Well, that's it. I knew I wanted lots of pedals and there weren't that many. I was at that point in time where you probably, as a bass player, you think you can only buy the pedals that say they're for bass. You don't realize you can buy anything and it's probably going to be fine. So yeah, I think it's just around that time where the only things you could get were like the Electro Harmonix Bass Big Muff, the Yellow Boss Overdrive, the Boss Bass Chorus, and that's probably it.
The Bass Big Muff. God, we sold so many of those.
Well, they were 50 quid. They were 50 quid on the nose, and it was a perfectly good drive. I mean, it had the same thing that Big Muffs have, which is a big old mid scoop, which is absolutely the opposite of what you want for a bass, for an overdrive. So it was a bit of a weird one, but it sounded good on its own. I've never heard it in, you know, context of a band, whether or not it makes your bass disappear.
Yeah, it was funny. I think the first Electro Harmonix pedal I remember buying with my own money when I moved to Brighton and was a student, I bought the Nano Big Muff. But before they did the small case one, just the ones that was in like, not what Nano is now. I think they call it like Nano XO now, don't they? But like the mid-sized ones. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. And I had it on my pedal board. And then we did, at BIM, I think every band did a recording session at what's that studio in Brighton that everyone went to?
Brighton Electric?
No, before that.
Brighton Road?
No. Old school. It was up the top of a hill. I think Orbital had a studio there for a bit, or maybe Fatboy Slim. Can't remember what it was called. But anyway, everyone recorded there. Huh. And we recorded this track that we were doing for BIM, and the engineer was like, yeah, this sounds terrible. Try this. And it's just like, it just, they sound really good at home, but they just, obviously, they just don't really cut through a mix, do they?
No, I guess not.
They sort of just make everything sound like mush, which is good if in some situations, but not if you're trying to cut through in a solo. No. In one of my ripping solos, it was like, yeah, it doesn't really cut through.
You're ripping 18-year-old solos, yeah.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, back to EQ pedals. To me, personally, I would say if you want straight up EQ, G7 all the way, realistically. Because, like you said, it's analog graphic EQ, nice and easy. Yeah. It depends if you want more than that. And in some ways, I would say, yeah, if you want like comp and EQ, there's a lot more. I mean, they go all the way up to like £400. If you look at Empress do the Power.
Oh, the Power one.
Power,
yeah.
EQ.
I think Deluxe. An EQ makes so much more sense on sliders. You might disagree, dear listener, and think the rotaries are easier, but I don't know. There's something about being able to just visually see what my EQ arc is doing that makes
absolutely.
It much, much easier to create the desired effect.
No, I totally agree. I think, you know, it's like, oh, you need to cut, you know, if you're in a mix recording or you're in, it's like, I want more bass, I want more level, and it's just easy enough to set everything flat and then just boost the volume. I would agree with you on that one, Joe. I think sliders are definitely a little bit easier to understand and to use.
They are indeed. Now, dear listener, after Matt and I have finished this podcast, we're heading over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can join us there, actually, for as little as $1 a month. And each week, we take questions from the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week, Duke Van Orr, I don't think that's his real name, has asked us about a multi-effects pedal that he wants to get. He's got a couple of options. He's actually choosing between a Boss GX100 and a GT Core. So we're going to talk about that. Maybe some of the other options are out there and the different advantages you'd get to either of those. And also, Matt and I are in line with the fact that I mentioned it a bit last week, I think, on one of the podcasts, that I'm going to Copenhagen for a gig in a month, and we're flying, and I've got to make a fly rig for me and my guitarist. We don't know what amps we're going to have, so I need an instrument and a very small flyable pedal board that's going to do the right things for us. So I thought Matt and I could talk about the best guitar. Now, I'm going to do a guitar instead of a bass. This will be a fictional fly rig, but we're going to talk about the best guitar and portable pedal board. So I'm thinking like pedal tray nano sized, roughly. We're going to pick a handful of pedals and a guitar that we think would sound good going into any amp, or, you know, we can make the most of any situation with that setup. So we're going to be talking about that over on the Patreon. Should we do news, or should we do the topic of the week?
I think we should do topic of the week first, and then we'll cover, like, everyone's, you know, if they're listening to this, the number one guitar podcast, you don't always come here for news. You come here for me and Joe, and you probably already read all the news. And then you just
want take on it though.
And you want, yeah, but you know, our hot take is like, does it look good? Yeah, it's good. No, we're obviously far more detailed than that, but Joe, we do have a very cool topic of the week, and I would like to give it some airtime.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, let's do that. So every week, dear listener, we're doing topic of the week, where I spin a wheel, a fictitious wheel, where there's a real wheel. It's on a some sort of wheel website. Wheelofnames.com is where I made my wheel. And it's got the names of all the top tier Patreon supporters there. I spin that wheel, and whoever it lands on gets a goodie bag, and they get to choose the topic for next week. Now, last week, it was Barry Gresbick who won the topic of the week. Barry Gresbick is, of course, the founder, owner, operator, the man behind Gres Guitars. And he has come up with a very interesting idea for topic of the week. He said, how about a detailed discussion on the dream perfect bass 6, down to details like nut width, neck shape, pickups. Then, later this year, I'll make one using as many of your specs as I can. Obviously, it would have to be based on the Mendocino and basically not an offset. It will be the Mendocino GN6.
I like
so,
it.
So, you know, I was speaking to Barry about it as well, and he feels like he's made a short scale bass, he's made a long scale bass. The next thing, obviously, to make is a bass 6 anyway, so why not start here? So, yeah, so Matt and I are going to talk about maybe some of our favorite baritones and bass 6s and the features that we like about them. Let's have a little chat about how we think we'd put together something into something as wonderful and gorgeous as a Gres Mendocino. Now, before we do that, I better spin the wheel now so that we can choose next week's topic as well. So I'll do that.
Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of this week's Spin the Wheel is Rob Nordvik. Rob, I will be in touch and we will sort out what topic you'd like us to discuss on next week's episode. Well done. Now, onto Barry's topic, the basics, the Dream Bass 6. Matt, you've owned a couple of Bass 6s. You still own one. I own one. How do you feel about Bass 6s? What do you, where do we start?
Where do we start? Well, I guess people at home start by going to gresguitars.com and they can play along. Bass 6s, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because we said before that we loved the Squire Bass 6 way back in, 2013 or 2014, but ultimately, actually, it didn't really stand. That model, that spec didn't really stand the test of time. The only other thing at the time was the Gretsch.
Well, I think the the Gretsch is kind of their bass 6, which is a sort of bass 6 baritone. They often sort of sell it as a baritone. I'm not even sure it comes strung up E to E, that one, but you can obviously because it is a
it didn't used to, then it did,
right? I
think they changed it, but ultimately I think it was a bit of a bass 6. And then you didn't really see anything for a while. There was the Pawn Shop bass 6, I think, for a little bit. And then obviously it was more recently when they had those ones that they're sort of taken off in popularity. And I think, as we said
the
a few months ago,
you
know, with the Beatles documentary and more people wanting bass sixes and more companies making bass sixes. And actually, when I was in Larvik, I forgot to mention that they had for sale the Ibanez SR6,
right,
which is their bass 6, but it looks like their SR bass, but it's a bass 6.
Okay.
And I think people have got better at making bass sixes in the sense that they know it needs to have decent tension. It needs to have the thicker strings. That's one of the things we said on the Squires. They come with very light strings, and actually putting a thicker set of strings on makes a massive difference.
It's still the problem with the Squires, even the Classic Vibes. The standard Fender's standard string set is something to, I can't remember where it starts, at 20 maybe, but it's 84 or something like that is the lower string, which is crazy light for something that you've got to get an octave down. That's insanely low. Like I have 105s on mine, but I think 100's fine. Even like a 95 would probably just about do it. But any lighter than that, and it's just not going to work. And yes, you're right about those old vintage modified Squires. They were great. They were £280. Why not take a punt on them? And the answer was because the hardware was so bad, it was just unusable. Like, it was an instrument, we could never get them set up correctly. And we ended up, okay, fine. You know, making mods is, you've only spent £280 on the guitar, making mods is totally fine. But I don't know, it just, an instrument that both of us, I think, found we had to keep modifying to try and get to a usable place. Whereas the Classic Vibes have solved a lot of those problems, the proper Mustang bridges on there for a start. They actually work out the box. That's what's great about them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, come back to your question about bass sixes and, you know, what do I think, and having used a few, I just think they're a nice alternative to pick up and play. I find that more riffs and songs come out of me playing a bass six quite often.
Really? Wow.
Because, well, I just think from a guitar point of view, you can't always just play chords on them. Really good ones, obviously, they do ring out and they do have a lot of note clarity.
Yeah.
But I just think they're just nice alternatives and they just do something a bit different. Yeah. And I think, you know, specking out something like the Mendocino is, you know, that is a really cool opportunity because the body shape feels like it's right for that. Obviously, as you said, you've got your one is tuned. Is yours the an actual baritone one or is it just C to C? I can't remember.
What, my Squier Basics?
No, your Grez guitar.
Oh, sorry, my Grez. Yes, my Grez Mendocino is standard scale length, but I have it strung with 13s.
C. Yeah, that's right.
And I have it in D standard.
Yeah,
sorry, so I think drop D, that one.
Actually. Drop D. Oh, right. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I think the Mendocino is a really good body shape for that and for a bass six. But yeah, I'm into it. I'm into bass sixes. I think they're a really nice alternative to, if you're a guitar player and you've already got a couple of guitars and you don't know what to get, bass six is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other like really cool ones that's worth talking about is of who have been doing it for a long time is Dan Electro. They do their bass six as well as their baritone, and actually, I really love the sound of those because the lipstick pickups are kind of really ideal for this for a bass six sort of thing. It's kind of more in line with Grez as well to have that sort of thing. Certainly, the lipstick style pickups are what Barry's gone for on his bass, on the Mendocino bass.
I can't remember what I did have I had a baritone Dan
Electro. The Dan, you probably had the Dan Electro 56 baritone. That was sort of the popular one. That's the one that, oh, I've forgotten her name, from the band Boy Genius, but it was a solo project. She smashed one up.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't. I'm gonna have to look it up. But yeah. That's when that Phoebe Bridges. There we go. Go.
I was gonna say that, and then I was like, I don't know it well enough to.
She plays. She plays the 56 baritone, a sparkly version of it, and it's great. Again, those lipstick pickups are a perfect fit for that sort of instrument.
Mm. Actually, one of my favorite ones. And I always kind of wanted one because they came in loads of cool colours and options, but just didn't play in anything like it, band-wise or write riffs like it. But the Stephen Carpenter, Deftones guitarist, eight-string baritone they had for a while, didn't they?
Well.
It was just so low. And actually, one of my favourite baritones of all time, one of my biggest gear regrets, not because I had it and sold it, but because I just couldn't afford it, was the Taylor 8-string baritone acoustic they made, where it was a baritone, so B to B acoustic, but the G and the D were doubled.
Ah, very nice.
So that was very cool. But I think, you know, coming back to, I guess, the specking out the Mendocino, the great thing about the Mendocino is it's, as a standard guitar, it's pretty lightweight. It's obviously semi-hollow, opens itself up to a few different options. It's got a retro sort of vibe to it. So I guess we can just kind of go through it and sort of spec out. I sort of feel like it's one of those chances where someone says, spec something out. And I always just link back to when you played like Smackdown on the PlayStation 2 and you could create your own wrestler, but you could do like individual arm lengths, so you'd be like, okay, well, we'll make one arm as long as possible, one arm as short as possible, and then it's like, yeah, what should we do? Let's make them blue and we'll give them a mohawk. Just like, it's like, yeah, what nut width do you want on your Mendocino? It's like, do you do like 12 inches? Just like, how ridiculous can you make this guitar? Because when I generally spec guitars, I don't change stuff like that because I guess in some ways I'm like, I don't know enough about nut width to care about how much a difference it makes.
Right.
So I'm like, no, you build what you think is best. I know some people are like, oh, you know, 42 or 44 makes a big difference. I'm like, if you pick up the guitar and it plays nice, then that's good enough for me. So I guess really we should talk through the specs on the standard Mendocino and go, what would we change?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we, you know, we don't have to go drill in as far as nut width for now. I think one of the big things is going to be scale length on a base six, and obviously the longer you can make it, the better it's going to be for being tuned this low. Yeah. Fender go the longest with 30-inch scale, which is the same as a short scale bass. The, you know, bass six is can be, you know, the Gretsch ones were 29. You know, you can get away with it on something as low as like a 28, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I would have thought like sticking with Fender's 30-inch scale is probably the right idea for scale length, which would mean like you'd end up doing something similar, I guess, to Fender and have like a, it's like 1.6 nut width on the on a base six. So
yeah, because obviously obviously nut width is always important, but on a base six, it's like if it's not right, then all the strings will feel way too close together.
Well, this is it. I kind of want it to be as wide as it possibly can be, because really, I think it's weird that, you know, as I've mentioned, that the Squire and the Fender Bass Sixes come with such light strings. Wouldn't it be better to just give a tiny bit more width on there, and then be able to put some strings with some decent thickness on there, so that the instrument's actually playable? I realise there's a fine line that you tread between making a neck so wide that it's unplayable versus strings that are so thin that they're unplayable, so it's a tricky thing to do. I mean, one of the cool things about doing like a Mendocino is there is so many bass sixes are Fender inspired. You know, you think about the Cure's Schecter bass sixes, they're always offsets, always things like that. But you've got the Gibson EB6, which occurred in two different formats. In from 1960 to 1962, they did an EB6 in the 335 body shape.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Just a humbucker in the neck. They only made 67 in the time. Only 67 ever commissioned.
That is absolutely mad.
Exactly. There's one actually on Reverb at the moment for around £12,500. And then around the same time, I think they then changed and ran for 6 years with the SG variant of that, and they added two humbuckers to the SG variant. But it's like having that sort of heavier sort of Gibson, those big humbuckers, it kind of suits the idea more than the twangy Fenders do, I think, or at least gives you an option for something a little bit different, those big, you know, the solid mahogany bodies. One of the weird things with the SG one was that they went for like bass clover tuners. So like six of them. So the headstock is half the size, well, probably over half the size of the body. So
I'm just trying to pull up an image of it now.
It's the Gibson EB6. Now, they're super rare. I think they only made around 130, 150 of the SG version. They just really weren't popular.
They do look so cool though, don't they?
They look fantastic. Oh,
there's none for sale in the UK, surprisingly. Yes. Oh, there's none for sale anywhere, surprisingly. No. Does look cool though. But oh yeah, I can see the headstock now. Huge. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. I bet that thing is insanely top heavy.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a wraparound bridge as well. It's just like, it must have been a custom order, and then they just went, oh, we'll make a few of those, and then everyone's like, no one wants this.
No. Yeah,
like you say, but I guess maybe a direct reaction to
the base six.
Yeah. The base six, yeah. So they were like, what can we do? It's like, we've got an SG. I actually think the EB6 is infinitely cooler. You are right, £12,500, a lot of money, but yeah, just with one neck humbucker, it just, like, you look at it, you're like, that's a cool 335, and then you're like, oh, that is just awesome. Well, it's just that huge amount of space between the neck humbucker and the bridge.
This is kind of an interesting point. I think the biggest thing it comes down to with the Grez, doing a Grez Mendocino base 6, is actually the pickups. So we say it's a 30-inch scale. It's the double-cut Grez Mendocino. Having it being completely hollow is a great idea as well, just because most base 6s aren't. So we're getting
different
tonal characteristics. We're going to get that lovely sort of mid-push, which is exactly what you want from something, an instrument like this. Mm-hmm. The pickups are the big thing, because part of me wants to be like, well, if Barry was making one as the Mendocino to be part of the set, surely he should also use those lipstick pickups. But tonally, I kind of think of those lipstick pickups, they're fantastic. They'll do a similar job to the three single coils that you get on a bass 6. Wouldn't it be nice to have a bass 6 out on the market that offered something different? What mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. just a humbucker in the neck? Is that too niche? Does it make it not versatile? What about a humbucker in the neck and a humbucker like in the bridge, but I mean right in the bridge? So there's like this massive separation on the bodies.
Gap between the two.
This huge gap between them. But I mean, I love the idea of just having that sort of neck, that just the single neck humbucker. I love the idea of bass 6 with humbuckers. That seems to, you just can't get them. And I kind of feel like, well, a humbucker would make more sense for what, how are people using them? People aren't using them for tic-tac anymore. It's not a country and western guitar anymore. People are using them for big, heavy, sludgy, cool, awesome sound.
I like the idea. I mean, obviously going to the bridge pickup just affords you a bit of extra bite and cut through.
Of course.
But I like the idea of taking inspiration from that EB6 and doing a neck humbucker only.
Yeah.
But then what I would say is that you could probably do something clever with the pickups.
Right.
And what you could do is build in something like, I don't know how this would work. Would it work?
tell me what you're thinking.
I am thinking of the Fender TBX EQ system, which is were they dual pots? Yeah, so they call it a treble bass expander, and it's a stacked and is a stacked 250k/1 meg pot that expands your tonal palette, because it's basically a push control that will help you cut through more. So they're on like the Clapton Strats,
right?
No battery necessary, so you don't have to have an active guitar, but you could do something like that. Or I've just had a thought, what was that other thing that we were talking about recently? King Tone. So we were talking about King Tone effect based in the UK. And for Strats, they do that thing called the King Tone Switch,
right?
Which was that they say give your guitar a voice. So the King Tone Switch opens the door to tone. It is basically a 6-position pot, so 6 click positions, with a little circuit board with 4 dip switches. You can have up to 16 different treble bleed settings.
Ugh.
So rather than having a tone control, you have a neck humbucker, and then you have this, and then you just bleed through how much you want. So you still have 2 controls. It still looks really cool.
Yeah.
But I never use the tone control. I'm never going to sweep. It's going to be dark enough already. Mm-hmm. But if you had something where you could... Do you remember that also the Guthrie Govan Charvels had that switch, and they put it in something else for a while that basically bypassed volume and tone and then went straight to the output jack?
Right. Okay.
So then that way you're not going through any capacitance whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So I like the idea of putting in something like that King Tone switch. So you can actually bypass the EQ completely, fully open.
And it's just a switch, so we could still choose the pickup that we use.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Right. You've got volume and then tone, but instead of tone, it's a six-way treble bleed. I kind of, in some ways, think of it like the Varitone control on a 335, but you haven't got all the other things in
there
as well.
I love the idea. And I tell you what we could do. I'll come back to what pickup I think could be a great solution for that in a second. If we're doing that, we're losing the tone control essentially to do something like that. What about a mute kit on the bridge?
Yeah.
What about a flippable mute kit? Something that we can bring up and up, pull up and down. Something so that we can get that palm muted bass tone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea of having something that is far more. It's great for guitar players who play guitar to do something bassy without playing the bass.
Yeah, great. A Jaguar mute kit on the bridge.
Yeah, so something like that would be quite cool. So Jaguar mute kit, one with one humbucker in the neck, and then you just need to make sure that the humbucker's got enough treble in it, but then you could cut some of the treble or bleed some of the treble through if you wanted to.
On the pickup, what about the new Lola? Because I know because Barry uses Lola pickups often. What about the Lola DB humbucker? Have you seen the new? I think it's pretty new.
Oh yeah, so it's like they look like a radiator kind of type cover, right?
They do, exactly. Yeah, it's black with the chrome bars, two chrome bars across it. So it's their highest output of any humbucker. The DB avoids the higher compression and muddiness often associated with high output humbuckers. It delivers top end harmonics that cut through without sounding harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And pair the DB with a 1 meg potentiometer to open up the top end even more.
Yeah, I'm into it.
It looks cool. It would fit the aesthetic. It'd be great for a double cut Mendocino. I know this is, we've gone a little bit off piste here from where the obvious route for what the Mendocino could be, but I actually kind of feel like this makes it more versatile, more usable, actually applicable to the way most people would use a basic.
Yeah, because my basics, you know, the Squire one, I never change the settings.
Right.
You know, I find the sound that I like and then I use it. And a lot of the times I play it with a pick and I do kind of palm mute in some ways.
Right.
And I sort of, you know, want it to sound more like a bass, but it sounds very different to playing the Bronco.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the idea of something that guitarists can play that, one, looks cool, but two, can give you some bass vibes, can also really cut through a mix. You're going to add loads of gain to it. So it becomes a really versatile instrument without having too much on it.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm pretty happy. I think this is a cool version of a bass six, a double cut Mendocino.
I kind of want it now. Because I wouldn't, obviously, I don't think you need to change the body.
No.
And actually, I don't know
would
how you
give it a coloured top?
Well,
what about a black top?
Obviously, most people would say, well, surely it's going to be pink. But the black top does look awesome.
Yeah. Have you seen Blake's Sparkle black top?
I think so. I haven't looked at it for a while. There's two options here, right, that I see that could be very cool. Because the black top is, like, it's not matte, is it? It's a glossed black finish with cream binding. There's two options here. One, I think, is extreme, but I would love this. What about if you went white top and then gold sparkle binding, so you made it very Gretsch-like? In that fact,
you're trying to get your white penguin in there, mate.
Yeah. or if Barry didn't want to do that, I actually like the idea of and I can't believe I'm saying this because I generally hate the color, but quite a dark two-tone sunburst, but like a rubbed finish. So it's a matte finish, not gloss.
Right. So like a violin finish sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm sort of thinking about when you see an old sunburst Martin and if that really played in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he uses redwood tops, it's got a really nice grain on it. I like that sort of violin sunburst. I like it matte, slightly rubbed back, not relicked.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Is yours got a lacquered neck or is it an unlacquered neck?
It's lacquered, yeah. The whole thing's sort of has a gloss coat to it.
Unlacquer that bad boy.
Why would you do that?
I just like the idea of raw wood in my hand. Can't believe I said that.
Wow.
As I was saying it, I was like, I don't mean it that way.
No.
I'm sure it'd be fine. But I like the idea of the black top or the white top with the gold binding.
Yeah.
Single neck humbucker. Bit of option in terms of the treble bleed. Keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And then the mute kit as well.
What's the switch?
It's called Kingtone. I'm assuming it would work. Kingtone is the company. Kingtone Effects.
Right.
It's called... I just said what it's called. Now I can't remember. Kingtone Switch. They just call it the Kingtone Switch. Hmm. So I'm assuming you could... Works on Strats, Teles, and humbucker guitars. So yeah, I think you could just have this instead of a tone control. Or you could have it with a tone control. But basically, you've got true bypass, your normal tone 100% unaffected, treble bleed engaged, Hendrix edge added, 100% Stevie Ray Vaughan, Albert King, and BB King.
Right.
But I think there's little dip switches and stuff you can change inside. So they're normally $99.
Wow. I think this is great. This is a great option. We'll put all this to Barry and see which things he wants to take on board. It's not going to end up anything like these. None of us will make the cut. But
otherwise, I would say, same tone process bridge, obviously the same kind of plate. I would say Evo Gold Jumbo Frets, again, same.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to change that. I just think it's the pickups, it's the scale length, it's the nut width.
Yeah.
And I wish it was turning up at my house tomorrow.
I know.
I was just like, oh.
This was a great build. I'm really into this.
Yeah.
Guitar.
Yeah. Well, I hope he digs it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, dear listener, we are coming on to the end of this week's podcast. But before we go, I just wanted to do a little bit of our show and tell for this week. So last week we were talking about the chorus pedal, the new Earthquake Advices Aurelius, and I also demoed with that using the Solid Gold Effects Beta 5, their new compact pedal. Bass preamp overdrive sort of thing for the bass work on that demo, but it wasn't very focal. So I've made a new demo this week, which is more or less just the bass with a little bit of supporting guitar so that you could really hear it, because this pedal is fantastic. Before I play it, I want to talk a little bit about the pedal, because it wasn't exactly what I expected when I really dug into it. Certainly when I was using I had an Ashdown jazz bass last week, and the pickups are normal and relatively low output, and it was fine. It was, the Solid Gold was a good exciter for those sorts of things, and it did a good job of being a bass preamp. Lots of things do. Lots of pedals do a good job of that. So, it was great at it, but it wasn't, it wasn't jumping out at me as having any more or any less than any of the other SVT style bass preamps. And then this week, I got out my 57 reissue Precision bass, which I have a Seymour Duncan quarter pounder P-bass split pickup in there, which is extremely high output, and I coupled that with the Beta 5, and what I ended up with was this gorgeous, super old school, soupy, muddy Ampeg B15 style tone. I mean, the pedal's great because it doesn't just give you an ordinary EQ. You have a presence control and a body control, and then you're basically sort of choosing where your mids are and then your gain and your volume. But it was very, when you hammer something into it, it was very dirty, but had that lovely boxiness that a vintage Ampeg did. I'll play the demo now, but I just thought it was great for that very specific application. It was fantastic. Here it is.
Thank you.
go. There it was.
The last note there, Joe.
And the little slide up.
No, but you should have scrapped the slide. Just that last note was just like, oh, it hit me right in the feels. Oh, just really nice and bassy. Sounded great.
Yeah, it's just lovely. Loads of warm, articulate, just not what I expected. I know I was hitting it hard with such a high output pickup, but so many preamps, bass preamps, what they're trying to do is be clean and be articulate in a kind of a modern way.
Mm.
And you end up having to really mess around with them to try and get an old school sound, whereas this was just unashamedly old school. Like I couldn't get away from that tone. Like that was the tone that the pedal produced. It was great. It was proper old Motowny bass sound, and it's exactly what I want. And coupled with the P bass, I just thought it was a brilliant, brilliant pedal. So, you know, even if you're not a bass player, dear listener, if you just want one pedal for, you know, going into it doesn't have a DI out on it, but so, you know, running into a DI or just something for recording if you want hardware instead of software. There was nothing else on that. Oh, no, actually, I popped a little bit of a compression on it on the bus afterwards. But other than that, that's just the Solid Gold Beta 5. Fantastic.
And that's what you want, isn't it? You just want nice and simple, easy, just a good sound.
You can just trust it to do the job.
I think it's, you know, bass amps now to me, a lot of bass amps tend to be kind of very flat, very modern, very punchy. And like you say, you have to kind of go very vintage if you want the sort of that vintage vibe that you had there, you know, using something like a P bass. So I think it's nice to be able to have that in pedal form and then just go straight into an interface or whatever from there.
Exactly. I mean, even running, you run that pedal into the front of like just a clean Class D amp and it will sound like you're playing an old SVT stack, you know, which is great.
You get
the benefits of it being super portable and still sounding like a proper amplifier. Really, really good. Really great job, Solid Gold. I thought it was awesome. Anyway, we are coming to the end of this week's podcast. So if you want to get in touch with us, dear listener, for any reason, you can email us info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram, message us on the Facebook group. If there's anything you think we should check out, or if you've got dad joke suggestions for me, then please get those across to me. Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon now. You can join us there for as little as $1 a month. We do an extra 30-minute long episode every week. You also get access to our whole back catalogue and everything else like that. Thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Thank you, dear Patreon supporters, for listening to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Now, of course, as usual, it is time for me to thank our top tier Patreon supporters for being so amazing. Thank you to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Joyn Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravett.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.